This is a download from the Post Keynesian Economics Study Group, PKSG. For more information and terms of use, please visit www.postkeynesian.net.
This file contains the comments on Michael Joffe's paper by Gemario Impoliti.
I am going to comment actually not on this talk, but on the paper, because that's the only thing I could read. So this new paper is not ready yet, I guess.
I haven't written it. This is all work right. In progress. It's not written as a paper yet.
Right. So I'm going to spend...
Sorry, that's not quite right. The bubbles part is written up as a paper, but not published.
Okay. So that's... We won't comment on non-published paper usually.
Okay.
But then I'm going to quickly refer to some of the contents of the talk. I think that the basic ideas that you present today are already in the paper. The paper is about the root of economic growth under capitalism. The research question is, it starts from a fact. We all know that in capitalistic society we observe sustained growth, and we can also see it in the historical data. When this starts, it's fairly correlated with the Industrial Revolution. A verbal model of the engine of growth, try to understand why growth take off during the emergence of capitalism. And this model is, the answer is the role of firms. What are firms in what are firms in a market? What do they do in a capitalistic world? It's trying to provide a new micro foundation for endogenous growth. Okay? Trying to understand how capitalism has the engine of sustained product growth and income per capita growth. So the market will not be a necessary feature. It's pretty clear now how we can have the market we can have the market, but without the capitalistic firms, and that have different dynamic implications. So the firm is key, and different type of firms are going to be key. So today we heard a lot. We heard about different type of markets, but also different type of firms will have an important role in this process. So Angus Madison data, and this is the takeoff I was talking about here. There are a bunch of technological innovation listed. So here we see the spinning machine. And here we see probably Smithian growth. What you call Smithian
growth,
right?
That's what I call
Smithian growth, yeah. So growth in the presence of a market, but without capitalism. And here you see the big takeoff. So that's a fact. Big takeoff after Industrial Revolution. I don't want to waste time. So here, there is a simulations on Javier Saleh Martin webpage examples of convergence and lack of convergence. So you can click on this website here, and you'll see in some cases in the last 50 years you have seen convergence. Like India and China are converging toward advanced countries, but you also see many African countries not fitting the convergence, the solo convergence stories or whatever you want to choose. So the theory is that the engine of growth in the capitalist society is happens through cost-reducing activity, cost competition. And cost competition takes place, produces firm selection that improves aggregate productivity because only the fittest survives. It's very similar to Schumpeterian creative destruction. And so credit destruction and cost competition, these two concepts are related, are the engine of growth. And the basic concept is that firms are profit-seeking. They do cost reduction to increase their profits. So technological innovation is actually not necessary. So we can see other types of, we can see growth even without technological innovation. This is, I'm telling you again about the paper. So you can have accumulation. This is basically solo growth, right? Neoclassical growth. Then you can have developing existing technology. So this is the development of the R&D. So you don't need R, you just take the technologies that are there, you can develop. Then you have innovation, but you have learning by doing, you have organizational change, and then you have cutting labor costs, okay, through industrial relations. So all these are engines of cost reduction. Cost reduction is done with the target of maximizing profits. So my comments are going to be, I have very few comments actually. Before when I read the paper, it was not very clear why the market is not, in which sense the market is not a necessary institution for growth. Now I understand. So you can have growth, you can have the market not having sustained growth, and that probably is the Smithian economy. And then you can have the market and capitalist economy that gives you growth, sustained growth. So I think that, and I'm going to be a little bit provocative here, there's not much new here. I mean, besides what we know from Schumpeter and from Marx. So in Marx we know that the technological progress is driven by profits. So industrial growth starts with Marx, right? Then we know in Schumpeter that we also have some destruction part in Marx, right? The falling rate of profit. But in Schumpeter we have this creative destruction idea that really can be the intellectual legitimation of this sustained growth part, right? So it's not clear to me what is actually new in this microfoundation. You see firms here. You see firms here. So this is not the neoclassical world. It's not perfect competition. There are firms strategically interacting to become the market leaders. How do they do that? Through price competition. How do they do price competition? Innovating. Innovating, developing new products, improving existing products. Doing organizational change. So this is all this. It's been done. It's been done. Not only the foundations were Schumpeter, Marx, and Adam Smith, but people have been working in the profession a lot on what are the engines of capitalistic growth, especially during the industrial growth theory revolution in the 90s. So, Agion Howitz and Romer and Grossman Helper. So here you have the engine of growth is profit, and that happens only through in a capitalistic society. And profit, so growth is driven by profit and leads to introduction of new products. This is Romer. New quality of existing goods or machines, replacing old goods. This is creative destruction. This is Agion Howitt and the Schumpeterian tradition. So the difference here is that the concept of competition. In the Schumpeterian models, Agion Howitt and the like, you have that the new product or the new quality of a product replaces the old one. So here you have a direct competition across firms. In the model of Alla Romer, you have competition is horizontal. The new product is complementary to the old product. Right? So there is no creative destruction. There is no firm's exit. Okay. So now what people are doing, actually, I'm also working on these things, is to introduce firm heterogeneity. Okay, see, here at the end, you don't have representative firms, but in equilibrium you have representative firms. In equilibrium, all firms will grow at the same rate. Okay, so now we see in the data that firms are very different. Firms in different sectors are different, but even firms in the same sectors are different. They're different in terms of market size, in terms of productivity, in terms of innovation rates. So people are now are embedding the details that we see in the data, that there is heterogeneity across firms, and the representative firms model cannot be used, not before, nor after the equilibrium has been reached. So symmetric equilibriums are not interesting much to match the new data, so people are looking at heterogeneous firms. And heterogeneous firms also give you different policy measures. Right? So if you want to stimulate growth, you know that there is a market structure with firm heterogeneity. There are some firms growing more, some firms growing less. Some firms are very mature, they're not growing anymore. So if you have $7 billion or $700 billion to bail out a bunch of firms, knowing what are the most dynamic firms can be important for you, policymaker. Okay? In the short and in the long run, because we're talking about innovation. These firms are not static. Okay, technology is endogenous. Exactly this is what I was saying. That the old models don't match some microeconomic facts. So in the old models, there is a lot of creative destruction, so new firms replacing the old firms. But we see that in the data, we see that existing firms do a lot of innovation, not only entrants. So growth doesn't come only from new firms and new product. This idea, you know, like this, the little Google tinkering their product. Yeah, they're fine. 20%, 25% of growth come from there. But existing firms, they innovate to escape leapfrogging. And so we're trying to get new models for that, and also entering firms are very small, okay? Entry is really difficult in this, these are data, entry is really difficult in this market, but if you succeed and stay in the market, you grow a lot when you are small and young. So again, a policy recommendation, okay? Subsidize or help or give tax credit to young firms. They seem to be more dynamic in the data. That's another information for policymakers. All this debate can inform industrial policy. This is just Morten and Lenz's econometric paper on they have this Danish data, and this is just to it's a distribution of output per capita. Okay. Just look at this one. This is a normalization. You see that in the data, you don't see any representative firm. Output per capita is fairly spread out, okay? And actually, there is also, you can map this fairly easily to growth rates. There is a distribution of growth rates, okay, across firms. So this is some different, these are American data by Akshijit and Kerr. They're using the manufacturing data. And so here you see, this is the firm size. 1 to 500, 400, 5,000, very big. And this is citation, okay? So you see the citation increases with size, okay? And these are different types of firms within the size. Exiting firms, stable employment, entrants. So you see heterogeneity in all this category, right? So this is citations, the firms that sell site, pass work, and then citations that are self-citations, same. This is output in a way, patent citation. If patent is good, it's going to be cited. And this is input, R&D. You see, there is a size dependence, okay? And within the size, you see variation between firms of different types, exiting firms, stable firm entrance. So heterogeneity matters, and matters big time. And so probably that's where the theory should push us. To understand more how to embed firm heterogeneity, to complicate, if you want, not the neoclassical model, because we don't do anything with that. In the neoclassical model, in the solo model, or on the Ramsey-Kaskoupen, nothing happens. Innovation is not possible. There is no firm there, actually. That's the main message. So then we moved in the 90s to a world where there is a firm, and we understand its behavior. Okay, and understanding the behavior of a firm that is driven by profit maximization goals, we understand the dynamic of technology. Okay, now, 20 years after Romer, we know that we need to understand the behavior of firms that are different. And different firms do different things. Some innovate, some do not. Some innovate more, some innovate less. I think that, do I have a minute or should I stop? Yep.
A minute.
1 minute. Okay, so of course, these comments were, I probably have a different perspective. It's a more standard perspective, looking at the data and then proposing, thinking about the model. And it's probably more, the focus is smaller. So I'm looking at a problem and trying to understand. But there is a theory behind, there's always a theory, you know. It's, even behind the most practical man, there is always a hidden theorist. So in your theory of competition, right? So I say there is nothing new. It's Schumpeter and Marx. So I see duopoly. So in what you call cost tittering, I see duopoly. That's a duopoly. It can be static, it can be dynamic, but it's a duopoly. And, you know, probably Baumol does that already in his book, on the other papers, but I certainly know how to construct a model where two firms compete strategically through cost reduction, okay, and that leads to growth. I actually even written model. And, well, yes, you don't get price equal to unit cost. There are markups, exactly because there is a duopoly. And if you have heterogeneous duopolies, you're going to have heterogeneous markups. In some sectors, there's going to be a lot of high markups. Some sectors are going to be low markups. Depends on the number of firms, how protected it is the sector. But the logic is going to be a strategic interaction through prices, Bertrand, to quantity, Cournot. First mover advantage, you're going to have Stackelberg. That's the old textbook industrial organization. Right? I didn't understand what is trend extrapolation. It seems to me like you have prices and there are shocks on prices. But I was confused. I think I'm going to stop here.
Okay. Thank you very much indeed.